begin with an anecdote, which happens to be true. It sounds fantastic. I've always wondered why the difference between Moscow time and Greenwich Mean Time is 2 hours rather than 1 hour. Warsaw is Greenwich Mean Time, and so is Paris, and so is Vienna. And I could see why Moscow would be 1 hour different, but not two. And the reason has now been revealed from Moscow. The reason was that in 1930, in Stalin's orders, they went over to daylight savings time, pushing the clocks forward 1 hour. And then they forgot that fall. And for 61 years, they've been on this false time. And only this fall are they going to turn the clocks back. And that, in a way, symbolizes, it's a metaphor for this regime. It's been out of step, it's been out of synchronization, it went off on a tangent. I agree with almost everything Mr. Weir said, with one exception. I don't believe that communism is dead in the sense that it was once a genuine belief which has now lost support. Communism never has support in the Soviet Union. This is a myth. It is true that in the fall and winter of 1917-18, Lenin managed to gain a certain amount of support from the workers and the soldiers on a completely false platform of immediate peace, land to the peasants, and factories to the workers. But as I show in my recent book on the Russian Revolution, by the spring of 1918, he lost the support of the entire working class. In every single Soviet, where elections were held between April and June 1918, that's only 6 months after they entered power, the Bolsheviks were kicked out. And the only reason they then came back is because they used force. They dissolved all the genuine elected Soviets and reimposed them all. I was in the Soviet Union many times since 1957, and since I speak Russian, I can speak to people quite freely. I have never found any belief in communism. I found this quiet sense of despair all along. Nobody believed in the voluntary. People had to pay homage to it publicly because it was required if you wanted to stay out of the clashes of the police and to keep your job, but no one believed it. Everybody believed that we live in comfortably better than they are, that they are way off, and I can give you many, many examples of that. The disgust with communism, the rejection of it, has always been there. What has happened now, it has surfaced. It has come into the open. It has come into the open because the regime has reached a kind of dead end. It saw the economy looking forward, constantly declining, creating therefore tremendous social problems, and undermining the technological power of the Soviet army, which is the mainstay of the regime. Because to the extent that modern military power rests increasingly on high technology and on the industrial base which provides it, the Soviet Union had a very dismal prospect. This was very evident when I was in the White House in 1981-82, when I was quite certain that that the Soviet Union we are facing is a Soviet Union deep crisis, for which reason I was advocating, finding a very receptive audience in President Reagan, to squeeze them as hard as one possibly could. There's no danger that they would react in a violent way. The reforms came, and the reforms came at an accelerated rate. They went way beyond what the regime intended in 85, when the perestroika was started, and now things are entirely out of control. I recently spoke to a director of a Soviet public opinion research institute. I was at a meeting, he was a visitor here last year, and we asked him how perestroika was doing, and he said, brilliantly, superbly. I was very puzzled. In what sense? He said, it's destroying the system. And the system indeed is being destroyed and at an accelerated rate. Every time one goes there, I was there 3 weeks ago, I'm going again next month. Every time one goes there, one has a sense of collapse. But it's a good collapse. I know the New York Times and the liberal press bewails it. And I agree that Washington on the whole also is worried about it, but on the whole it's a tremendous process and a very positive process. what is in effect happening is that I think that except for some very obtuse right-wingers of extreme kind, right-wingers there, right-wingers here, very different people, reactionaries really, everybody more or less realizes that the system is kaput, that it is not reformable, that something new has to be found. And when you are in the Soviet Union, and a historian as I am, you're constantly faced with the question, what model should we adopt? Where should we go? And there are various proposals. They would like to imitate the United States. They would like to imitate Sweden. Sweden is particularly popular because, in their mind, it combines great prosperity with social services. But one has to tell them, you're not Americans, you're not Swedes, and therefore this model is different. Then some of them think of going back to Tsarist Russia. You know, the Tsarist Russia was far better, particularly in this last two decades, than most people realize. The fact is that all the good that it produced has been thoroughly destroyed by 7 years of communism, and there's no going back to that either. Therefore, my advice is you have to adopt democracy. By democracy, I mean not coming with any ideological models and telling people what to do, but letting the people themselves decide. And the more you decentralize the government, both at the political and the economic level, the better the results will be. Because there's no one who can foresee what in fact will solve the problems of the country, only the people themselves. And in fact, that is happening. You still have supposedly a centralized administration, economic administration. You still have Gosplan and all the old apparatus. But in fact, it isn't working. You go to the stores in the central Moscow, and the stores are empty. And yet people are not hungry. People complain, and yet nobody's starving. You cannot buy clothing except at exorbitant rate, and yet people are reasonably well dressed. Better dressed than the Harvard Square. So what the conclusion is drawn from this is that somewhere another market is operating, a barter market is entering, and that barter market is essentially the beginning of capitalism, of a free economy. Similarly, on the political level. The Soviet government threatens that unless it is kept in power, and as Gorbachev is the first secretary of the party, and this is president of the country, there will be civil war. But in fact, neither the state nor the party have a great deal of influence in the country at large, and there is no civil war. It's true that in certain areas, such as the Caucasus, there are some internecine fights between certain ethnic groups, but on the whole, the country is reasonably pacific. There is no great violence. I think these are scared tactics for the purpose of retaining the regime in power. Somewhere, people are arranging themselves to replace the missing authority. My conclusion is that the system is, in fact, disintegrating. This hoop is disintegrating. Peter Struve, who is one of my great intellectual heroes, a Russian intellectual who was active before the revolution and for about 20 years after the revolution, said in 1921, at the time when the new economic policy was introduced and there was great euphoria in the West, that the Soviet system was reformed, was being reformed, and the revolution is over. I talked about it with Thermidor. He said, it cannot be. This system is not reformable. It either is maintained the way it is, or it has to collapse. He said the smallest injection of freedom into the system will lead to its collapse. And he has been borne out by the events. And that system now is indeed disintegrated. What can we do about it? Yes, I agree, there's not a great deal we can do about it. I think we should, however, abandon the fetish of stability. We have seen what this has gotten us into in Iraq. The State Department lost stability for obvious reasons, because, first of all, if the world is totally stable, then you don't have any problems, because things take care of themselves. So, bureaucrats in the Department of State, and other Washington, who deal with foreign policy, don't have any real problems. So naturally, you want stability. The fact is that there's no stability in the world. The world continuously changes and things become, therefore, destabilized. It was the mistaken notion of the president that after this splendid victory in the Gulf War, that we should preserve the stability of Iraq because it's less of evil than a destabilized Iraq. See the results of that. Now we've gotten to the point for me to send American troops into Iraq, which could have been avoided if we were willing to see the situation destabilized. The same thing applies to the Soviet Union. Stability in the Soviet Union, that is the maintenance of the Soviet regime, central Soviet regime of the whole country, can be maintained only by dictatorship, military dictatorship. No other way can be maintained. If we want democracy in the Soviet Union and a free market, then we have to favor the centrifugal forces and not the centralizing forces. And that means that we have to enter into close relations with the various republics and even with and private enterprises, and try to the extent possible to bypass the central government. If we give loans, if we give technology, we should not give it to the central government, not to the Soviet government, but to the Republican governments. Now that will result in a certain amount of destabilization, but that way new things are born. We were for destabilization of the British Empire, of the French Empire, of the Portuguese Empire, of the Dutch Empire, but for what reason do we want to maintain stability in the Soviet Empire, which, as I say, will only lead to a new war. Strengthen the forces, anti-democratic forces. It's not accidental that the reactionaries in the Soviet Union have made the preservation of the empire the last bastion which they are willing and unwilling to serve. So these are my general conclusions. I'm on the whole quite optimistic about what's happening in Eastern Europe. I don't think we have to intervene a great deal. I think we can hold back, and things are going our way if we show the imagination and the boldness which are required. Thank you.